Welcome to Divorce Explained, the podcast where we answer your questions and navigate the process of divorce together. Sharing real stories and personal experiences, this is your guide through it all. With your hosts, family law specialist Steve Benmore and divorce lawyer and strategist Leanne Townsend.
Hi, how are you?
Have you heard of Amber Heard?
I have heard of Amber Heard. I think most of us probably have. So, well, and she ties in perfectly with today's topic.
And that's why I asked if anybody heard of Amber Heard. Notice the play on words?
I did.
Excellent. So I made a posting on LinkedIn about 3 weeks ago, when the trial decision came in on the Johnny Depp Amber Heard case. And I didn't realize that I was going to upset some people, because what I posted was that Amber Heard received something like $10 million. It's not appropriate to make false claims of domestic violence in court. Well, there were a number of people that were upset with me, and I balanced that posting with a subsequent posting explaining that in law school, I learned this concept, and the concept was it's preferable to allow 10 guilty men to go free than to convict one innocent man. And following that concept, I said, for every woman who is a victim, who was not a victim but made allegations that are false, there are probably dozens, if not hundreds, of women that have actually suffered domestic violence who either chose not to report it or reported it and regretted reporting it. And so I said, we, and then I wrote in brackets, I need to be particularly sensitive about the fragility and the very sensitive nature of the subject of false allegations of domestic violence, which is what our topic is today.
Yes. It's a very sensitive subject. I was thinking of that when I posted it today, because we're not suggesting in any way that the majority of allegations are accurate and are truthful. And, you know, in addition to that, there's a ton of unreported, you know, allegations that go on all the time, unreported cases of domestic violence. You know, it takes a lot for a victim of domestic violence to get to the point of actually reporting it. And when I was a Crown attorney for many years and my specialization was domestic violence, it was interesting because, you know, the way I was trained, and it was that you believe the victim, and I did. And generally, I found in most of my cases, there was no reason to doubt anything they were saying. But I found when I switched over into family law, it did put things with a little bit of a different lens for me, because I'm seeing it, you know, some of my clients, you know, may be accused of it. And I have some who are, you know, also the victims making the allegations. And it's just made me aware that there is a very tiny minority, very, very tiny minority of people out there who do make false or exaggerated allegations to gain an advantage. And I have someone I know personally who's very, you know, near and dear to me in my life, who is, you know, somebody I know inside out, who has been falsely accused. And so I've seen what's put him through personally, and how awful it can be to be someone in that situation.
It's absolutely horrible for somebody, man or woman or child, to be the victim of either physical, sexual, emotional, verbal, religious, financial abuse, any form of abuse, and then be second-guessed and questioned as to the veracity of their claims, because then you get burned twice. You were victimized twice, one by your perpetrator and then the second time by the system. And I'm not even sure which one is worse, when judges and lawyers and police officers don't believe you and you know it's true. And by the way, when I say don't believe you, I'm referring both to the victim, but also to the innocent accused. So it's a horrible thing, your friend or victim. So let's turn this IG Live into a practical workshop. And I thought we would spend a little bit of time explaining to victims how to bulletproof your allegations so that you are not second guessed. And then the other half of our talk, we will talk about the accused, people that are alleged to have committed, who have not committed such acts. How do they deal with it? So I'm going to start. I'll kick it off with the first one. And I deal with this all the time. Clients ask me, you know, this happened, but it happened behind closed doors. How do I prove it? So these are some of the tips that I give. Number one, if it just happened, immediately go and see a doctor. Explain to the doctor what happened. And if there are any, if there's any evidence of it, any physical evidence of it, have the doctor record it. Also, if you have a therapist, have a conversation with a therapist. And in fact, ideally, have it either via Zoom or live so that the therapist observe it. If there are children involved, consider in consultation with your lawyer to report it to the Children's Aid Society, because Children's Aid Society has a statutory mandate to ensure that children who are in need of protection receive the protection of the state, and a child living in a violent housing situation is definitely entitled to protection of the state. And CAS at minimum would visit and interview the child and interview the victim, possibly even the alleged perpetrator. Also, make extremely copious notes of what happened. And if it happened more than once, if there's a pattern of behavior, do your best to recall it. Also, create a list of anybody that you may have shared these events with contemporaneously. So for example, if it was an assault 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, or 2 weeks ago, and after it happened, you contacted your sister, your brother, your cousin, your therapist, your doctor, your financial advisor, whoever it was. And even if you didn't report to them exactly what happened, but you called them in a panicked state, that person would be able to testify or swear an affidavit that said, on this date, I received a very panicky call. And they were asking about, I don't know, did my husband empty out the bank account? That sort of evidence, although is not probative of the assault, it builds a circumstantial evidentiary record that supports the narrative. Now, if there happens to be better evidence, like a home video, that certainly is going to be helpful, or an audio. And in some cases, and by the way, we live in a world right now where there's videos everywhere. You could be having an argument with your spouse in the backyard, thinking that nobody is there, nobody is watching, but the camera of the neighbor, the security camera of the neighbor, happens to encroach on your backyard by so many feet and may have actually captured either the audio or the video or both of the problem and of the assault. So those are just some tips that I have given people who are going to make the allegation. And not all of it is always available, but at least I get them thinking about it so that they can start thinking about whether that evidentiary record does exist that would support the claim. Because once we make a claim, if it turns out that we can't prove it, not only does the claim being made not get rewarded with some form of legal remedy, but one can argue that if that doesn't get proven, what does it say about their credibility and the veracity of all of their other evidence that cannot be proven as well? So we got to be very careful.
Yes. And I just to add to, I mean, I agree with all of the points you made, and I certainly would recommend those. So just to add a couple comments to it, you know, if someone comes to see me and they, you know, are a victim of domestic violence and they're concerned about, you know, how that's going to play out in family court and protecting themselves, of course, the first thing I always want to make sure of is that they have a safety plan in place, because, you know, if somebody's safety and the safety of their children may be in jeopardy, you want to make sure that you have thought that through and you have a plan in place that if things did become so bad as to where you would go, whether it's a shelter, whether it's to stay with family or friends or whatever it might be. But it's really important to have that in place. You know, secondly, if you're assaulted or if you're threatened, I mean, that is a criminal offense. And while a whole multitude of things will flow from there, it is something, if you're, you know, if you are really scared for your safety, it is important that you call the police and that you make a complaint. And, you know, if you do that, you have to understand the police will come and they will likely arrest your spouse and they will be removed from the house and they will not be allowed to return and they will be put on conditions not to have contact with you. And their access to the children may have to be arranged through a mutually agreeable third party. But I mean, if you're in danger, that's very important to do. And secondly, in family court, I mean, that is something that comes up. It's a quite, you know, did you call the police? And still, you know, judges and some lawyers still fall back into that questioning of, well, why not? You know, they don't all understand that lots of people are victims of domestic violence and they don't call the police. But so if you have, and there's the reason to, then it certainly does help support your case. So that's something to consider. Along with the video.
You would think that in the Me Too era and with everything that has occurred with people from as small as Jan Gomeshi to as big as Harvey Weinstein, that the ship has sailed on those allegations made by people in power, that if it really did happen, you would have reported it right when it happened. But yet, that mindset still does exist. And when clients call me today and say, this happened last night, but I don't want my children to have a father that went to jail, so I'm not going to report it, I at least let them know that by choosing to not report it, and I'm not judging them, by choosing not to report it, they run the risk of, in the future, the allegation being questioned. And that is something that they have to really seriously consider, because if this is the end of their marriage, and there's no chance of this marriage being reconciled or restored, then an act of violence against a spouse and or children is an act that is a crime. And a crime that is not reported can be seen as a crime that is sanctioned and accepted. And
And what ties in with that as well is the Children's Aid aspect, because if you do report it to the Children's Aid and you don't call the police, the Children's Aid will be concerned, what are you doing to protect your child from the emotional damage of being around a parent who is abusing another parent? So you have to be aware that if you contact Children's Aid, they will launch an investigation and they will want to see that you, as the victim of the abuse, are taking steps to remove the child from that environment.
Exactly. Okay, in the remaining time we have, let's go to the other side. So we get calls all the time, you and I, from people that are being accused of having committed acts of violence against another spouse, and they vehemently deny the allegation, and we have to now represent those people and explain to them that if indeed it is true, sometimes it's better to admit to it and to apologize for it and to present yourself as a person who is remorseful and has taken steps to rectify and remediate that behavior, whether it's through group therapy or private therapy or any form of recognition and treatment. So if the person doesn't want to admit or doesn't admit because they truly say to you, it didn't happen, it really did not happen, then now we have to go to the other side. And so what do I do as counsel in situations where my client is steadfast in her or his contention that they did not commit the acts that they are alleged to have committed, then we actually start breaking down the details. So first of all, we will ask the other side to provide us with all of the evidence, video, photographic, audio, papers, doctor's notes, clinical notes, CAS reports, police reports, anything that they have. I would like to see all of the evidence, and I would like them to deliver to me immediately. Why? Because I don't want them having 3 or 4 months from now the ability to go ahead and manufacture anything that doesn't exist. So I want to immediately force the alleged complainant, the alleged victim, to provide me all of the evidence that they have. If there has been criminal charges late, my client obviously is going to have a criminal defense lawyer who I'll work closely with and ask them to get all of the Crown disclosure. And there are limitations with respect to the release of the Crown file to me or to my client, but we will work through that. And if absolutely necessary, we will apply for what's called a WAG order, which is named after a case, R.V. WAG, for the release of the police records and the Crown attorney records in the family court file. Now, I will go further. If there is litigation in the family law matter, in the divorce case, we will get an order for questioning. Now, if the alleged victim is claiming domestic violence in the litigation, she or he has now made the subject of violence a legal issue in the proceeding, which therefore permits me to ask questions under oath at a cross-examination, such as a questioning, with respect to the details. And it will be at that point that I will ask all of the very granular details of when it happened, where it happened, how did it happen, who was there. And I will ask them to, by the way, very respectfully and very professionally, provide all of the finer details of these allegations. And then we may compare that to the video or audio evidence that the complainant gave to the police when the charges were laid, if the charges were laid, to see if there's any inconsistencies. Because at the end of the day, if it really didn't occur and the person is lying, and they lied to the police and they lied in family court, there's a high probability that a liar doesn't keep track of all of the finer details. And when push comes to shove, they will be caught in the lie. Or at least they will be found to not be credible enough that would result in the allegations in family court being accepted and therefore remedied with any relief. So that's an example of how we deal with false claims of DV in family law matters.
And, you know, one thing I have to add to that is it can be very devastating on someone's life. You know, as we saw through, like, the whole Johnny Depp trial that everyone's aware of, you know, that he was successful in his defamation suit. And, you know, it to falsely, I think, in my view, the system is a little bit broken with respect to when people make these allegations, they're often isn't really a consequence to them, unfortunately. And so, you know, I think it'd be a horrible thing to be falsely accused of any criminal offense. And certainly, you know, domestic violence is up there. And for someone to make that accusation, it can have very devastating consequences on someone. And even if, you know, through court or whatever, you know, maybe it's disproved and all of that. It's one of those types of things where, you know, it leaves people wondering, well, you know, did he or did she? And, you know, so for people out there, I mean, I certainly would say, like, don't obviously ever falsely accuse somebody of anything. And there can be consequences, like we saw with Johnny Depp, where you could be sued for defamation or something in civil court. And, you know, if there's other types of damages that result from your allegation, you know, there could be other remedies available. But it is something that is very serious. And I do know from the criminal side of things, there is a charge called public mischief and obstruction of justice. And People who make false allegations sometimes can be charged under those provisions criminally, or perjury, of course, if you make a sworn statement that can be proven to, you know, again, keep in mind that, well, in some ways it seems like there is no consequence, and many times there's not. There are these remedies that can be available if you find yourself in a situation where you've been falsely accused of something.
And for the benefit of our viewers, I want to be clear that we have not given legal advice. The subject that we have discussed is a very sensitive, politically charged subject. Leanne and I have represented people on both sides, and we certainly sympathize with all of the people that are involved in a situation that involves domestic violence, because in a case where a family has had domestic violence, everybody suffers. And it's a very sad state of affair, but we want to let you know that we family law lawyers, we deal with this all the time. And oftentimes we don't even know what the truth is. We have clients who come and tell us a story, and we have no reason to question our clients. And it's not our job to investigate the veracity of the information that they give us. Although good lawyers like Leanne and I will certainly provide the client with significant intake, legal advice and direction to actually not allow false information to get before a tribunal like a judge or a mediator or an arbitrator, because at the end of the day, false information will not help our client because there's a chance that it'll backfire. So for those that are listening, we just want you to know that that this topic is a very highly charged topic. And if there's anything that we said that might have been inappropriate or offended you, on behalf of Leanne and I just wanted to say I'm sorry.
Yes, and likewise, I'm sorry too. It's, we're here to help. That's purely our intention here. And so we've tried to come at it as best we can, you know, to address this politically charged and just difficult topic. It's a difficult topic for everyone involved. So hopefully we provided something of value to listeners today. And we look forward to seeing you here again next week.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks to our listeners. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Divorce Explained. If you enjoyed it, don't forget to head on over to Instagram and follow at Steve Benmore and at Leanne Townsend Life for more. And if you're looking for specific divorce services, you can visit benmore.com and leannetownsend.ca. We hope today's episode made you feel informed and inspired as you move along through your divorce journey. Tune in next week for Divorce Explained.